A Senate shocker. David Long announces his retirement. Democrats propose a commission to investigate DCS. That, plus ads attacking Donnelly's tax vote, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending February 16th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Senate Republican leader David Long announced he will retire later this year after 22 years in the chamber and a dozen as leader.
Long says he's considered leaving the Senate for a few years, particularly in the lead-up to his 2016 re-election bid, but he says he wanted to accomplish a few more things, notably another state budget and a road funding bill. The Senate GOP leader says he's retiring for, quote, the right reasons, because, in his words, it's time. Long's departure creates an opening at the top of the Senate Republican caucus. Long says he'll let those still in the chamber decide who replaces him as leader. Early favorites to secure that spot include new Majority Floor Leader Rod Bray and Tax and Fiscal Policy Committee Chair Travis Holdman.
What does Long's retirement mean for the Senate and the General Assembly? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, how big is this announcement?
You know, it's another in a series of Republicans who get elected to office and don't serve out their terms. I think it means a lot for the caucus because I think he's been able to keep at least a veneer of unity within that caucus. I don't know who takes over from here, but I have a sneaking suspicion that the right-wing, how do I put that tactfully? I guess we'll just say Tea Party.
Oh, now we're worried about tax. Years later.
Anyway, the right wing of the party will probably control, and I think that's a, I think that message that it'll send to the public at large is not helpful for the Republican Party.
Is the caucus going to tack further right because of David Long's departure?
I don't think so. I mean, it's the Senate is interesting
there.
In this. And
no it, room.
The Senate's interesting in that. And, we saw this when David Long came to power. One, it's a big deal because we've only had two pro tems in
64 years.
Yeah, long time, right? So, and the way Senator Long came to power is much different than how Speaker Bobbs went, where Speaker Bobbs built his caucus, went out and ran those campaigns, and his caucus, many of them feel responsible for the fact that they're there, and they owe that to Bryant Boswell, right? So the relationship's very different with the caucus, whereas Senator Long had to kind of balance all these coalitions, you know, more conservative members, certainly, but
which has been growing and growing.
There was a large group of women in the Indiana Senate that that also got chairmanships and leadership positions and things like that because they were able to kind of cut that deal there. So it'll be interesting to see how those coalitions continue to exist. It'll be interesting how those coalitions how they behave as the summer goes on, and they hold back and they try to leverage this. And there'll be a lot of politics here. It'll be fun to watch.
Will it be harder for I think? Generally speaking, David Long is one who's been considered to be able to keep the different factions of the Senate Republican caucus together on most things. Is that going to be harder for the next pro tem to do?
I think so. Because in David Long, as in Bob Garton, who preceded him, you had somebody who was not just familiar with the institution, but to a certain extent was an institution in and of himself. And I mean that in a positive way. I know it's not popular to celebrate public service these days, but I actually in the minority who think that is an honorable profession and we should celebrate those who are willing to, in this case, give 22 years of service as an elected official. So
Longer than that in the case of David Long if you go back to local government.
Yeah, that's true. So I celebrate that, and I think I'm not somebody who is ever in a throw the bums out mood. I think experience is valuable, and it's that experience that enabled him in many cases to keep people, I don't want to say in check, but a knowledge of the institution and a knowledge of governance and the players and the history oftentimes is a powerful weapon in terms of keeping crazy ideas, I'm not saying from any particular party or faction of the party, but keeping people on task as much as possible. And I think there's a lot to be said for the caucus leadership as a whole right now on both sides of the aisle, and in both chambers in recent years have done a very good job, for the most part, keeping people focused on the issues of importance to Hoosiers.
And you talk about experience, and it was pointed out on Tuesday when Long announced he was retiring. Of the 41 Republican members in that caucus, only, I think, 8 of them were there when David Long even took over as caucus chair 12 years ago.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of experience to draw from at this point.
Well, it doesn't take a long time to get ramped up, and there has been a transfer, I'm sure, of the mores and the habits and, you know, the good things and the bad things about the way it works throughout the caucus. But I think it is important to understand that it is a relatively young caucus. I mean, for the longest time, for as long as I was covering the General Assembly, and actually almost ever time since, it has seemed like an old chamber. People had been there for a long time. And what we've seen over the course of several years now is a cycling out of older members, more experienced members, and this cycling in of new members. And so I do think that we will see an extraordinary jockeying for leadership in the caucus. And it will say a lot about that caucus, whom it chooses to lead it. And it will tell a lot about what the direction of the Senate will be, because we really don't know right now. The Republicans hold an overwhelming majority. They're likely to still hold a very large majority after the election. And so they will drive this bus, and it'll be interesting to see who emerges.
All right, well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: will David Long's retirement shift the Senate Republican caucus further to the right? A, yes, or B, no. Ann Delaney has already weighed in. Last week's question, we asked you to give us a grade for this year's General Assembly at the halfway point. 7% say it's an A, 8% say a B, 27% give it a C grade, 33% a D, and 25% give it an F. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, State Senator Eddie Melton wants to create a special legislative commission to investigate the Department of Child Services.
An independent consultant's review of DCS is underway and expected to conclude in June. Democratic Senator Eddie Melton says his proposed 2-year legislative committee wouldn't interfere with that. Rather, he says the committee would study the consultant's report and help implement necessary legislative action. There's also a pre-existing state panel, the Commission on Improving the Status of Children, that looks at DCS. It involves all three branches of government as well as outside stakeholders. Melton says he doesn't want his proposed committee to duplicate those efforts, but still thinks it's necessary.
Mike O'Brien, is Melton's idea a prudent one?
No, I think it's a political one. I think this is going to be the study that reviews the study that was part, and then we'll have a new commission to sit on top of the existing commission. That is balanced in how it, you know, in the representation on it. I know Democrats have been pining all session long to have hearings and make a big political issue out of this, when what is really needed right now is grown-ups in the room reviewing DCS and really finding out what, if any, are there systematic efforts? Is there more money needed? How do we manage caseloads? How do we empower caseworkers? All those questions are being asked, and there's a study in place right now that will be done by early summer. Updates are going to legislators on the progress of that study. So I think Governor Holcomb handled this exactly the way he should have. But I know Democrats would love to just drag this through the dirt on TV.
If I listen to you correctly, I think you may have suggested that the lawmakers aren't the grown-ups in the room, but I'll go to Ann Delaney.
You are killing me, man.
Was Melton's idea a prudent or a political one?
I think it's a very prudent idea. They've been in control for 15 years since the last time that Mitch Daniels said what we needed to do with DCS, and precious little has been done. The state legislature adopted legislation to deal with the caseload, and I think it's prudent on the part of the state legislature to stand up and have some backbone and actually do some investigation. I mean, the fact that the governor hired some outside consultant who's going to report to him and others, but he's going to pay the bill for this, doesn't give a lot of confidence in this. We know what some of the problems are. We know that those caseworkers are overworked and underpaid. We know that the technology in that department is antiquated. All of those things they've known
that's
for 15 years.
That's being addressed.
It's being addressed. Yeah, well, what have they done with the salaries?
It's literally going to be addressed this year. The technology piece is being addressed
now. What about the salaries? What about the $34,000?
We created an entire agency to do this. That agency didn't exist before Ms. Daniels got elected.
I know. You all do that. You're great. Just like with workforce development, you have another study about why you've got
that's what this proposal is.
Programs.
This proposal is another study on top of a study
in
another
different group, not a bureaucracy, which is what your governor has created there on the workforce development
front.
The whole
subject of this part of the show is about Democrats wanting to create more bureaucracy.
It's a very responsible and very adult
layer of government to layer on top of
it. It is not a layer of government. They're not creating
a bureaucracy. I want to ask another question about this to John Katzenberger, which is this. Republican leaders at the State House so far have said, we can't do anything before we get the results.
They can never do anything.
We can't get anything before the results of this independent study. What Senator Melton is proposing is something that would come after this independent study. Is this going to be harder to say no to?
Because it comes after the study? I don't think so. I think what we have here is a failure to communicate, or at least a failure to bring along.
That's a good line.
They should get Ann and I involved. Yeah. Very well.
Yeah, maybe not. But, I think that you know, the governor is within his right and responsibility to create the commission that he created. Maybe he needed to bring along a few more Democrats. Maybe he needed to bring along some more thought outside of the usual channels. And that would have blunted the effort from Senator Melton at this point. But I think, trying to bring this on behind the governor's study, it probably is not a... I think that makes Mike's argument a little more salient because...
A little.
I'll take it.
I said a little, Ann. I mean, I'm not...
Very little.
I'll take it.
So we've got a needle over here, and you can...
Just
okay.
Go on the other way.
But I do think that because it would come afterwards, it's probably... It depends on what the governor's study says, but I don't think it'll have the same kind of weight.
Well, given that it is a legislative study commission... If it is created, can we expect all that much from it? Especially since they're not the grown-ups in the room, apparently.
You
are getting killed.
I spent my whole day in that building. You are killing me.
I don't think we can begrudge elected officials for wanting to look into a situation that where the stakes are as high as they are with the health and well-being of our youngest Hoosiers. There's no problem there. But it's not really the skill set of the General Assembly traditionally. If you look at... This is almost more of what you see on Capitol Hill. We're going to, with the government oversight, we're going to look into assassinations. We're going to look into, Russian meddling. That's really not what the General Assembly does. They don't do investigations. There are certainly interim study committees. Well, I'm just making an observation.
So
they're not the same. But so that's a little different. The other thing that strikes me as odd, and I've mentioned this before, and I still don't get it, If Eric Holcomb were in his second term, let's say he had just last year won re-election or in 2016, I would understand some motive to hide, sweep under the carpet. Given that he can point to the change in leadership, it seems to me he has every incentive to want to try to throw everything possible at solving the problem. Because if he doesn't...
So you're saying if you're Eric Holcomb, just let this legislative study commission go?
Not only let it go, well, I do whatever you want, but the more resources and the more that can be brought to bear, it's only going to benefit him because if there's a perception... Let me just say, if there's a perception on this issue that he is trying to sweep, and again, I don't know what his motivation would be.
Kicking the can down the road.
Well, wait a minute, though. But then every time there is some misstep or, heaven forbid, a child's death, it's going
to
come back on him in a big... So that would be political suicide, it seems to me, to try to cover something up.
2020 is a long year, a long way away. The U.S. Senate took a series of votes this week on different immigration reform plans, and none of them garnered enough votes. Following up on a pledge from Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to consider immigration reform on the floor, the Senate took votes Thursday on four different proposals. Three of them received more support than disapproval, but not the 60 votes necessary to advance. Those proposals included a lengthy path to citizenship, a crackdown on sanctuary cities, and a bipartisan reform plan that included a path to citizenship for DACA recipients and border security funding, a plan opposed by the White House. The Senate then rejected President Trump's immigration proposal 39-60. Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly voted for all four proposals. Some of these votes don't necessarily, some of these plans don't exactly line up with one another, practically speaking. John Katzenberger, what do you make of Donnelly's votes yes on all of them?
Well, you'd like to say that it's akin to 3D chess or something very much like that, but really it's more of a cluster. And I think
it's really
that,
checkers.
Yeah,
really
it's not even checkers, checkers. I'm telling you, this is a you know, this is throwing everything against the wall. You know, the politics be damned, and you're trying to box in particularly vulnerable candidates one way or another. And so Senator Donnelly voted the way he felt like he needed to, because he knows exactly what the purpose of these votes are, or purpose is, and that is to end up in an ad at some point in the campaign process. There really was no, I think it's telling that the final vote was the only one that really mattered, because it actually did something. It defeated the president's proposal. All of the rest of them were noncommittal. These were procedural votes meant to pin down senators in 30-second or 60-second ads. I think that Senator Donnelly probably navigated that as well as he possibly could, and it'll be up to his opponents, which we'll talk about in a little bit, to try to use that against him over the course of the next 5 months.
Were these, more than anything else, purely political votes?
I mean, I think clearly those who are concerned about the expiration of DACA and the deadline that's looming would rather be on the side, in its simplest construct, of being for some kind of DACA reform that enables people to have a pathway to staying in the country legally. So that much, I guess, is philosophical as far, but you're right, it is a lot of the politics here, and maybe not even 3D, like 4 or 5 with in virtual sense, maybe quantum physics involved, because you look, just on this issue, it started with Mitch McConnell saying, you know, as part of the let's not close down government deal, we're going to have an open, freewheeling discussion. Well, in the back that's of his mind, he probably realized that's the exact perfect thing if you don't want DACA, because now, with the approach he took, it was clear nothing was going to emerge from this cluster. I think that's the technical term, as
it
John
is.
Suggested, that could pass or would pass muster with the White House.
So this leads.
So clearly, there was a lot of political intrigue and strategy.
That leads me to my next question, which is, now that these four votes have taken place, is that it as far as immigration goes, at least in the Senate for a while?
Nothing would really surprise me. The one thing that's striking to me is now, I think one of the problems. I think Donnelly navigated this as well, I think, as he could have, because nothing was accomplished. I mean, let's just take the big picture look here. Nothing was accomplished. Neither party won. Everybody went on record, and nothing happened. I mean, so if you're Democrats, the base Democrats that already think Joe Donnelly's too moderate, now he's on record supporting the wall, penalties for relatives of DACA, you know, people that are here, illegal DACA residents. I mean, they're now on record on a bunch of stuff that Democrats should and do hate and oppose, and Republicans too. So this made no sense to me. The last vote was like, let's just vote the president's thing down and get out of here, right? I mean, that was pretty much what they were doing. It was unbelievable.
If you're somebody who wants to see immigration reform, are you really discouraged by what you saw in the Senate?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think the other explanation for Senator Donnelly's vote is he kept the issue alive. I mean, part of it was to get it out of the Senate, get it into the House, and see if some compromise can be arrived at. This is a total failure on the part of not only Mitch McConnell, but Donald Trump. I mean, there was one bipartisan appeal there that had garnered a fair amount of support. And what did Trump do? He came down and crushed it. And all of that nonsense he was saying about being forgiving and welcoming and opening, it's just one more lie, like the ones he tells every single day.
The self-labeled fiscal conservative group Americans for Prosperity launched ads this week aimed at incumbent Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly and his vote on the tax bill.
AFP Indiana strongly backed the federal tax bill, which cuts corporate and individual tax rates, but also potentially explodes the deficit, which AFP has in the past been concerned about. Senator Joe Donnelly voted against the measure, arguing it will eventually raise taxes on middle-class Hoosiers and doesn't do enough to curb outsourcing. AFP's ad goes after Donnelly for that vote.
Senator Joe Donnelly said he'd support tax cuts for hard-working Hoosiers, but when he had the chance, he said no.
John Schwanis, is this just the beginning of third-party groups' attacks on Donnelly over specifically the tax bill?
Maybe I'm imagining things, but haven't we already seen or heard in the case of
radio
ads? Well,
certainly from the state party, yeah.
Well, but even, I think there have been, if not Americans for Prosperity, there were some of the other special interest groups that were trying to pin him down in terms of voting a certain way or actually push him a certain way.
Right.
But the tenor is the same. It's not as if before they were saying, we would really welcome your support, Senator. I mean, it's always done with a sledgehammer. And so if the question is, is this a start, or is I think it's a continuation of what we have seen, not only in this race, but that's a weapon that has been used, I guess, with some effectiveness in prior Senate races here. Dick Lugar, Lugar Murdoch race, for instance, and others. So I think if you don't like these types of things, then you want to become a hermit for the next how many months?
TV,
don't watch TV. Don't
radio,
listen. Except public television and radio, where there is no advertising. Of
except
sport,
when
right?
somebody's touting their own show. Oh, you
well,
didn't.
I didn't even do that yet.
Oh,
but I should.
Well,
maybe later.
You set them up for it. Right
thank
there.
You.
We've seen Republicans over the last several months kind of trying out different lines of attack on Joe Donnelly. Some that they've stuck with. Some that they've left behind. I haven't heard about the mariachi band in a while, but we have started to see a more consistent attack about the tax bill. Are we going to hear that from now until November?
I think so. I think we'll hear about that as long as they think it's effective, and that seems to be their best hold right now. People are still feeling good about the tax bill, or they just don't know enough to feel otherwise about it. So I think that for the time being, that's going to be their main attack. I think it's important, too, this is the new nature. You know, there is no off season for campaigns, and so we're going to continue to see these, and they're going to continue to be much more hard hitting and, in some cases, negative. But I think we reflect back on those votes that were taken in the Senate, and I think some of the votes were intended to do this to Donnelly too, and that is, as Mike said, it will make him less popular among Democrats and try to drive schisms among the Democrats who have shown an ability to say, well, you're not good enough on this particular issue, so even though we agree with you on many other issues, we're not going to support you. And that's a problem for Democrats. Democrats have to be united if they're going to take advantage of the midterm elections, and I think the Republicans understand that, and very cleverly and cannily are using that against them, even at this early date.
But that was a pre-Trump era. I'm not sure that the schisms will
play. I do want to ask about it. We talked about that on the show before. But is Joe Donnelly liberal enough for a bunch of Democrats in the state to get excited enough to go and vote for him?
Yes, because the alternative is Rokita or Messer or whoever that other one is. No, I think it's fine. And I think the average Hoosier is going to understand that what this is all about is a tax cut for the rich, which not only is a tax cut for the rich with expiring tax crumbs for the working and middle class, but in addition, it explodes the deficit, which they always talked about when Obama was in there. Oh, the deficit, well, the deficit's gone to the side. The deficit's exploding, and their attempt to deal with it is going to cut Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. Three rails that Donald Trump promised during the campaign he wouldn't touch. Lie.
Americans for Prosperity, the group that's running this ad in support of the tax cut and against Joe Donnelly for his vote because of it, is a group that has railed against the
deficit
in the
yeah.
past. And that would seem to make their position on this incongruous. Do Hoosiers care about the deficit?
I think they support the tax bill. I think ultimately this vote, and none of this makes or breaks, a campaign. These votes aren't that impactful, right? But they do build a narrative into, are you with us or against us? The third Republican in the race, I should mention, is Mike Braun. I guess if you're not a congressman or better, and doesn't remember your name, you're just...
I just forget.
He just hasn't
Congress
paid.
Or higher.
He hasn't That's bought it. Enough advertising
That's
yet.
That's exactly right.
He's bought more than everybody else.
This is all about timing. It's when the day of reckoning comes. Because look at Ronald Reagan. Huge tax cut, and people still credit him with the tax cut. But guess what? There was a day of reckoning, and George Bush, read my lips, no new taxes, got stuck with holding the bag and had to pay the price. And at some point, someone will have to pay the price here. The question is,
we're paying
how
it right
hold on.
Now.
But
we're
ultimately,
it right
are we going to see
we're paying
whether you
it
think,
now. We're paying the price. We talk about infrastructure, and what he wants to do now is get $200 million in this $1.5 trillion deal and let the state and local contribute the rest. The state and local don't have the money. We're riding on roads in Marion County that make us look like a third-world nation because there is no money to repair them. That is the fiscal irresponsibility this tax bill does.
All right. Well, finally, we talked at the start of our show about Senator David Long's retirement. So as we end the show, I'll ask you all for one name who you think will replace Long as Senate President Pro Tem. Mike O'Brien, I'll start with you.
I am not playing your pick one senator and make the other 39 angry game, particularly after you've started the show.
All right.
Yeah.
I want
to tell you somebody whose name is not being mentioned who ought to be considered if the Republicans actually want to be progressive and want to look like they actually value the contributions of women. Vanita Becker has been there for a long time and has an institutional memory and would be the person who could bring people together.
John Katzenberger, quickly, a name.
Roderick Bray.
We asked that question on this week's issue edition of Indiana Lawmakers, available on many of these same stations.
Cha-ching.
And the answer from Ed Feigenbaum, our analyst, was the two names you mentioned earlier.
Rod Bray and Travis Holden. That's Indiana Week in Review. Couldn't even give me one name. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Katzenberger. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.